Hello, welcome to Literally from the North Shore, and thanks for tuning in. Today we continue with KTWH volunteer Beth Alexander's reading of Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach's book, A River Through Two Harbors. This book chronicles fictional North Shore law enforcement officer Deidre Johnson, who uncovers a crime ring that is trafficking Native girls to the harbor in Duluth. This book contains mature themes and may not be appropriate for all listeners. We pick up where Beth left off last time.
The remainder of the night, Deidre spent going over in her mind possible scenarios of the reunion. They all had a happy ending. Jessica was a ball of nerves as they sped along I-35 to the Twin Cities. Deidre could see the panic in her eyes, and she was sure that if they had not been trapped inside a car traveling 70 miles per hour, she would have fled. Deidre reached over and touched her hand. "It's going to be wonderful. You wait. I just know it is. Did you tell my mother I was coming with you?" "No. I knew if I did, she would get in her car and race to Two Harbors, and I didn't want her taking chances, especially driving at night. And I knew that if she waited for us to come to her, she would agonize over our meeting until we arrived. Believe me, I gave it a lot of thought, and I think this is the best way." They rode in silence for a long ways. "I wasn't a saint, you know," Jessica volunteered. "You don't have to confess to me. All your mother told me was that you were troubled before you ran away." "No, I mean after I ran away. When Mom finds out the things I did to survive, I'm afraid she won't want me around." Jessica began to cry, softly at first, then more uncontrollably. "Please, Jessica, I know you're frightened, but your mom is going to be so happy that you're alive. Nothing else is going to matter. Knowing her, she'll let you tell what you want with your own timing. She loves you, Jessica. It will be all right. I know it." Jessica took a deep breath and sat up straight in her seat. She wiped her eyes and resolved to face her mother, no matter the consequences. Deidre sensed the girl begin to tense up even more as they drove the residential streets, eventually stopping in front of her home. "You stay here while I say a few words to your mom. When I give you the hi sign, you can come to her." Deidre rang the doorbell and Melissa opened it immediately. Evidently, she'd been waiting. "Hi, Deidre. Welcome. Well, don't just stand there. Come in." Deidre beamed. "Remember I said I had a surprise for you? Are you ready? You'd better hold my hand tight." Melissa looked confused and Deidre motioned toward her car. Its door opened and Jessica stepped out. "Oh my God, my baby!" Melissa shrieked, and she ran down the sidewalk. Jessica hardly had time to move before her mother reached her. She wrapped her arms around her daughter and buried her face in the girl's hair, all the while repeating over and over, "Jessica, you're home, you're home." After several minutes, Deidre approached the two and led them toward the door. "Let's move this party inside. I'm getting cold, and your tears are going to freeze into icicles on your face." Mother and daughter couldn't let go of each other. The reunion was what Deidre had hoped for, and by 10 o'clock she decided it was all going to be well. "I've got to be going. Love you both, but I want to get back to Two Harbors before morning. Call me soon and tell me how things are going." Melissa tried to talk her friend out of driving home in the middle of the night, but Deidre had made up her mind. On her way home, the realization hit her. 11 days until Christmas, and she had yet to buy anything for the twins. She resolved to take the weekend to do her shopping. She wanted to get a small gift for Jill, something for the twins that they could play with together, and perhaps a token gift for Ben. It was going to be a good Christmas, better than she had been expecting. Chapter 25. In the early morning hours of the 15th, Deidre arrived at Inga's, then spent the morning sleeping. She went to her office in the afternoon, hoping Jill had taken the day off and that she would be able to spend some time alone, thinking. No such luck. "Good afternoon, boss lady. Just wake up. How'd it go with Melissa and her daughter?" Deidre more or less avoided the question. "Well, it went well. Anything happen I should know about?" "Zach Burton called. Wants you to return his call as soon as you can. Jeff wants to meet with you, but he said it can wait until you have time. Even next Monday would be okay. Other than that, everything is pretty quiet. Do you mind if I take the rest of the afternoon off? I've got something I want to do at the women's shelter." Deidre let her go with her blessings. She wanted to be alone, but first she had to call Zach. She reluctantly dialed his number. "Hey, Deidre, thanks for getting back to me. How you feeling?" Deidre shrugged, even though she knew Zach couldn't see her. "I'm okay. Good, in fact. What's so important it can't wait? Zach cleared his throat. On that file you gave me, the one from Gerald Coulter, there was one more delivery scheduled, remember? The ship name was the Aegean Sea. The delivery number was 3. It is due in port on January 3rd. I would guess after our raid last week, they'll be reluctant to make that delivery. But to be safe, I think we have to set up like we did before, if for no other reason than to assure ourselves that the 3 women aren't shipped out because of our lack of follow-through. Are you with us? Deirdre didn't have to think. Of course I am. We can't allow one more woman to be violated. I guess that'd be your answer, but I had to be sure. We're meeting tomorrow at 9 in the morning in the same office as last time. See you then. The next day, she sat through the meeting, not being surprised that the plan was pretty much the same. Zach said they'd be using a different ruse to camouflage their presence. He wasn't sure what excuse they would use for their being on the docks, but plans would be in place by the time they met for final instructions on the 28th. Now Deirdre had a more difficult assignment. Find a special present for the girls. The stores were crowded, every aisle choked with shoppers growing more frantic by the moment. Deirdre really had no idea what she was looking for, and she aimlessly wandered through the store. As she turned to leave the toy section of the department store, she spotted what she knew she would buy. It was a dollhouse built to scale. One wall was missing so she could look into the house that was divided into an upstairs and downstairs. Each level was partitioned into several rooms, each of which was completely equipped with furniture and appliances. She was able to find a set of people to go along with the house, her eyes being drawn in particular to 2 blonde-haired dolls representing children. They came complete with changes of tiny sets of clothing. She had everything packed in a very large box and gift-wrapped. Then she realized she should get something for Ben. That was a problem. She wanted something special, but without any romantic connection. Not cheap, but not terribly expensive either. Then she remembered that, when he returned from his last camping trip into the BWCAW, he lamented the fact that some coals from the campfire had landed on his sleeping bag and burned a hole in it. The stuffing was spilling out. After putting the dollhouse in her SUV, she headed to Sporting Goods. A young lady who seemed to know what she was talking about guided Deirdre through the various models. Finally, she decided on one filled with artificial down that had a temperature rating of 10 degrees. It cost more than she expected to pay, but what didn't these days? That too she had gift wrapped, and as she carried it to her vehicle, she hoped Ben would admit if it wasn't what he wanted. She made up her mind to offer a disclaimer. He could return it if it wasn't the kind he wanted. She'd save the receipt just in case. It took her several minutes to get to Ben's, because the shopping mall was outside the city limits. She pointed her SUV downhill, carefully applying the brakes to avoid sliding into cars in front of her. She was relieved when she pulled into the driveway. As usual, the girls answered the door. "Get your coats on," Deirdre ordered. "I need help bringing in some gifts." The girls scrambled to get dressed for the outdoors, Megan putting her boots on the wrong feet in her haste. "Here, let me help." Deirdre bent down and switched the boots. "That will feel a lot better," she laughed. She looked up and was startled, embarrassed really, to see Ben staring at her. "What?" "Nothing, just looking at you," was all he said. Amid squeals of delight and questions that came faster than she could answer, Deirdre guided the moving of the wrapped dollhouse inside. "I don't think there'll be room under the tree," Marin complained, sounding almost alarmed. "Oh, sure there will be," Deirdre said as she moved some of the wrapped presents already in place. "Be careful," Megan warned. "That one's yours." Then she covered her mouth with her hands, panicked that she had given away a secret. Ben took her in his arms. "That's okay. She'll never guess what you got her." Deirdre went to the car to retrieve the other gift. "See? This one's for your daddy. He'll never guess what I got him either." The rest of the evening was filled with the magic that only children can produce at Christmas, and Deirdre realized she loved the girls more than life itself. That scared her, and she thought, "If Ben ever remarried, how could I give these 2 up?" She and Ben each carried one of the twins up to bed, and together they tucked the girls in. "Good night, you 2," she said. "I love you more than you'll ever know." "I love you too," they said in unison. Deirdre stayed the weekend at Ben's, feeling a little guilty that she was neglecting her dog, Pete, but knowing he was being looked after assuaged her feelings. Inga walked him twice a day, and she had hired a dog sitter to come in twice a week to take him out of town where he could romp in the woods. Most of the time, however, Deirdre was having too much fun with Megan and Marin to be troubled. The excitement of Christmas rapidly approaching kept the twins in a constant state of anticipation, and their joy was contagious. Every time she looked at Ben, saw the love in his eyes for his daughters, the more she wanted a repeat of what she had experienced under the mistletoe, and she wondered if he felt the same. Saturday night, after the girls were in bed and a movie was playing on TV, Ben sat down beside her, put his arm around her shoulders, and drew her close to him. She allowed herself to rest her head on his chest. They sat in silence for several minutes. Then Ben reached for the remote and turned the TV off. "This case has been tough on you, hasn't it?" he asked as he looked straight ahead. Deidre nodded, and tears formed in her eyes as she pictured the girls with whom she had been working, pictured Anna's ravaged body. "I see it in your expression every time you look at Megan and Marin, and I sense your fear that something like this could happen to them." Again, Deidre nodded. "Sometimes I look at them and wonder how I can make a difference in their lives, how I can protect them from the world," she lamented. "Ben, I look at what society has become, and I wonder what chance do they have?" Ben thought for a moment. "We have to be careful, Deidre. Day in and day out, you and I come in close contact with the evil in this world, and it's too easy to become jaded, thinking the whole world is like that. But it isn't. The world is filled with good, decent, loving people whose only wish is to live peacefully with their neighbors. You and I are doing everything we can to make sure those two little girls have a chance at that kind of life. We can't do any more. Today was a wonderful day. Chances are tomorrow will be too. The day after, well, let the day after take care of itself. If we don't, we rob ourselves of the joy of living." Deidre had no way of responding. Had those words really come from the mouth of the man who had been an egotistical jock in high school? Ben gently tilted Deidre's face toward him and kissed her forehead while he stroked her hair. Then he kissed her like she wanted to be kissed ever since that evening when the girls had set them up in the doorway. Sunday dawned one of those perfect December days. The sky was blue and cloudless, the snow was fresh and powdery, and the forecast was for temperatures in the mid-20s. The four of them went sliding again on the zoo hill, and afterward they returned home to have hot chocolate with miniature marshmallows bobbing in the brown foam. Ben said, "Girls, I have a surprise for you after we eat supper and clean up the kitchen." They begged him to tell him what it was, but all Ben would say was, "If I told you, it wouldn't be a surprise, would it?" It was dark by 4:30, and they ate early, tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches, something easy to make and quick to clean up. By 5:30, they were on their way to Lakeside Park. As it came into view, Deidre could hear the girls inhale, followed by an "Ooh!" Acres of parkland were lit up by millions of tiny lights. Ben parked, and they got out of his car. Deidre made sure the girls were bundled up and wrapped a scarf more securely around Marin's neck. Then they set out on the trek, a paved path that led them through a maze of animated figures made of wire outlined with lights. Figure skaters and snowmen, Santa and elves, leaping reindeer and scurrying bunnies, all choreographed to move to the rhythm of Christmas carols. The place was alive with families and singles, grandparents and lovers, all enjoying the free cookies and cocoa being handed out by real live Santa's helpers. Everywhere she looked, Deidre saw people having fun, laughing and slurping hot drinks, their cheeks pink from the cold and their eyes asparkle with the season of giving. She looked up at Ben. "You are right," was all she said. That evening she drove home, happier than she had been for several years. Deidre sat at her desk Monday morning. She felt a letdown from the high she had experienced over the weekend. Two cups of coffee later, she was still feeling out of sorts. After the burst of excitement on the dock in Duluth, with its huge shot of adrenaline, she looked at her meager office and was at odds ends. The FBI had pretty much taken over the trafficking investigation, and her days with the BCA were numbered. She wondered why she was even occupying office space. What affected her most was the realization that they really had not dried up the stream of girls being transported down Highway 61 from Thunder Bay, through two harbors, and to the ships arriving at the harbor in Duluth. Jill sensed her situation. "What will you do after this is over?" she asked Deidre, the tone of her voice telling of her concern. "I don't know. Go back to my cabin, I suppose. Wait out the winter and then see what summer brings." Even as she said it, Deidre knew she would never be able to return to cabin life as it had been. She needed people. "How about you, Jill?" "I'll go back into the secretarial pool. We're hired on temp duty, filling in for vacations and special needs like this. I'll volunteer at the shelter, read a lot. That's about it." "You really don't have anyone, do you?" Deidre asked without thinking. Jill shook her head and looked at the floor. "Want to talk about it?" "Not much to say. I don't get along with my mother, and my dad always takes her side. I left home when I was 16 because I was using drugs, and they finally gave me an ultimatum. either get treatment or they were going to turn me over to social services. I ran away and lived on the streets for a while. Now I'm here. What made a difference in your life? You're extremely capable. You're not on the streets. What happened to lift you out of your situation? I finally couldn't stand who I was any longer and tried to take the easy way out. Suicide? Jill nodded. I was taken to a hospital in Duluth to get help. There I met the most marvelous chaplain. He had experienced much of what I had. He spent hours with me, letting me talk and sharing his story with me. He got me into a women's shelter in Duluth and lined me up to get some training in a business school, and, well, here I am. End of story. I hope not, Jill. I hope not. Deidre got out of her chair and gave Jill a hug. I really believe better days are ahead for you. For the remainder of the week, Deidre felt as if she were in limbo. There wasn't anything that made time drag like having nothing to do and no direction for the future. She was getting as antsy for Christmas Eve to arrive as were Megan and Marin. Evening, she visited with Inga, took Pete for walks in the snow, and tried to wade her way through a tome written about events leading up to World War II. She wondered if people then thought society was getting so perverse that it could not endure. Deidre put the book down on her lap and pondered that question. She concluded that, if she had been alive then, she would have the same feelings she had now. The world has always experienced turmoil, she thought, and she vowed to begin trying to concentrate on the good rather than the bad. Ben's words from the other night had had a remarkable effect on her thinking. On Friday, she gave Jill the small present she had bought and wrapped. "This is for you," she said as she handed the gift to her secretary. Tears welled up in Jill's eyes as she carefully unwrapped what seemed to be a fragile object. "Oh, Deidre, this is lovely," she gasped as she draped the silk scarf around her neck. Deidre had attached a pin to the scarf, and it gathered in and reflected the bright colors of the cloth. "Thank you from the bottom of my heart." Deidre was delighted by Jill's reaction. "Have a wonderful Christmas, Jill. Are you doing anything special?" Jill looked a little embarrassed to answer. "I'm spending the holidays with a friend. We graduated from high school together and have reconnected through Facebook. He invited me to spend Christmas Day with him and his family. I'm worried sick about what he'll think when he sees me in person." Deidre tried to reassure her that he'd be crazy if he didn't get to know her. They walked to their cars together, Jill to go to the shelter and Deidre to go to Duluth for the weekend and then Christmas. She never had been a good singer, but today she couldn't help but sing a carol along with a crooner on the radio. In Duluth, she decided to stop at a coffee shop on the east end of town and debated about going by the drive-through window, but decided to go inside to order. That way she could doctor up her mocha the way she wanted it. Standing at the counter to place her order, she looked over her shoulder at the customers sitting at tables. Her heart dropped. At a corner table sat Ben and a very attractive young lady. He was holding her hands between his and was leaning forward. By his expression, she could see that he was talking intently to her, never breaking eye contact. Deidre offered up a silent prayer that he not look up and see her staring. The server handed her cup of mocha she had ordered, and as she moved to put the money on the counter, the loose coins slid through her fingers and clattered on the floor. Her hands trembled so she could hardly hold the cup, and some of its contents splashed out. "Are you okay, lady?" the worker asked, shocked. "Yes, yes, I'm okay," she said, and hurried out the door. On the way past a trash can, she threw the half-full cup in the bin. In her car, she put her head on its steering wheel, choked back her sobs, but couldn't stop the tears from dribbling off her chin. She held no anger, only an aching heart. Wiping the tears from her eyes, she managed to make it through the Christmas rush traffic and arrived at Ben's before he did. "Were you crying, Deidre?" Megan wanted to know. Deidre answered honestly, "Yes, I feel sad today, but I'll be okay. Let me go wash my face before Daddy gets home." She climbed the stairs to her room and ran cold water over a washcloth, wrung out the excess, and placed it over her tear-swollen eyes. After several minutes, she looked in the mirror. Some of the swelling had subsided, and the redness was not quite as noticeable as it had been. She put on a new layer of makeup and went downstairs. Just as her foot hit the bottom step, Ben came through the door, stomped the snow from his boots, and took off his jacket. "Daddy," Marin said when he stooped to give her his ritual kiss, "Deidre is sad today." Ben went over and wrapped his arms around her. "You've been crying. Your day must have been as bad as mine." Deidre couldn't help her reaction, and she felt her body stiffen as he touched her. "That bad, huh? Well, I'll go first. I got a call this morning from my uncle's granddaughter. Her father is the same age as my dad, so even though she's officially my cousin twice removed, she's only 3 years younger than me. Because of the similarity in our ages, we grew up together more like sister and brother than second cousins. To make a long story short, she wanted to have a cup of coffee with me and talk about a problem she's having with her boyfriend. We met at that little place on London Road on the East End. When she told me he had hit her during a recent argument, I told her to pack her bags and run, told her if she needed a place to stay, she was welcome here. So, what was wrong with your day? Deirdre felt her face flush, and she hit it on his chest. Finally, she murmured, "Nothing, just me behaving like a foolish schoolgirl. Give me a minute for attitude adjustment, and I'll be right down." She turned tail and ran up the stairs to her room, where she flopped on the bed, not knowing whether to laugh or cry. In the end, she became angry at herself for jumping to conclusions. She stood up, took a deep breath, squared her shoulders, and looked in the mirror. "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the craziest of them all?" The mirror didn't answer, which she took as a good sign. "Sorry about that," she apologized as she made what felt to her like a grand entrance. All three of them were standing at the bottom of the stairway, watching her descend. She chuckled at the thought of a grand entrance, and no one asked questions. Chapter 26. Ben had made an advent calendar for the girls, a stack of 25 compartments in the shape of a Christmas tree. Behind each compartment door was a symbol of Christmas. Today, the 22nd of December, it was Megan's turn to open it. With great diligence, she pried the small hatch open, reached in, and took out a miniature dove. "Do you know what that is?" Ben asked. "I know," Marin exclaimed, wildly waving her hand. "It's a bird." "Ah, but what kind of bird?" The girls thought for a moment. "A pigeon?" Megan asked rather than answered. "Close," Ben laughed. "It's a dove. What does a dove represent?" "What does represent mean?" Marin asked, her brow furrowed. Deirdre covered her mouth. "It means what it stands for," Ben answered patiently. After a lengthy silence, he said, "It stands for peace." "Oh, you mean like when people don't shoot each other?" "Well, something like that." Ben decided that was enough of a lesson and decided to leave morality to another day. "Who wants pancakes for breakfast?" Both girls' hands shot up. "I do, hooray!" And they ran off to get their dolls. Somehow everyone made it through the weekend, and Monday became a grueling day for the twins. "Daddy, can't we open just one present today?" "We promise not to bug you any more if we can open just one," they whined, so many times that Ben had to make an edict. "Every time you ask to open a gift early, I'm going to tack a half an hour onto when we start opening them on Christmas Eve. Be careful what you say, or it might be Christmas Day before we open gifts." The girls' eyes widened in surprise, and they went off into the other room. Deirdre and Ben could hear them whispering, perhaps wondering if they should test the law. For the rest of the day, they never mentioned the subject again, but every so often, one of them, or both, would go to the base of the tree and read the labels on the presents again. Deirdre watched them count who had how many gifts. That night, Ben and Deirdre allowed them to stay up an hour past their bedtime, and they made hot apple cider to go with the cookies Deirdre and the girls had made that afternoon. When they were being tucked in for the night, Megan and Marin were like wiggly worms, as Deirdre said. "We are not wiggly worms." "Oh, yes, you are." "Are not." "Are too." And Deirdre pretended to pin Megan down with her quilt. "Okay," Ben had to say. "It's time for sleep. Settle down now and close your eyes." Deirdre watched as both children lay perfectly still on their backs, their eyelids closed, but behind the closed lids she could see the movement of their eyes, and she knew what would happen the instant she and Ben left their room. He turned on the nightlight and turned off the bed lamp. As soon as the two of them were in the hall, they could hear giggling and moving around. "I think we're losing the battle," Ben whispered in Deirdre's ear, and they tiptoed down the stairs to the living room, where they sat and squinted at the tree lights so that starburst patterns were created. "A perfect day is coming to a close," Deirdre thought. "An end to a perfect day," Ben declared out loud. She nodded. Christmas Eve day began with a chorus of voices at Deirdre's door. Ben and the girls stood outside singing, "We Wish You a Merry Christmas," followed by an off-key version of "Santa Claus is Coming to Town." She looked at her clock, 7:25, threw on her robe, and opened her door. "We get to open presents tonight," Marin excitedly exclaimed. Megan took her hand and led her to the stairs. "Daddy made a special Christmas breakfast for us. Come see." Ben had made French toast by cutting the bread slices in the shape of an evergreen tree with a cookie cutter. After frying them in the usual manner, he had decorated each tree with colored sprinkles and blueberries. Then he dusted them with powdered sugar, making his creation look like a winter scene. It had to have taken him an hour, Deirdre thought. The family sat down to their Christmas Eve breakfast feast, complete with crispy bacon and eggnog. "We usually go to church on Christmas Eve. Will you join us, Deirdre, or would you rather stay home?" In her entire life, she had never attended a Christmas service, or very few others for that matter. She thought for a moment and then saw the expectant looks in the twins' eyes. "Okay, should be fun," she said, not completely sure she really wanted to attend. That afternoon, they all went to the largest mall in the city and watched shoppers frantically rushing to make their last-minute gift selections. They stopped to hear a choir singing in the mall's rotunda. It was a good choir, singing excerpts from some of the old masters, Bach, Handel, and others, and Deirdre let her spirit soar with the notes. She realized she had taken Ben's hand, and he was gently squeezing hers. Supper was a simple smorgasbord, set so everyone could fix what they wanted from several selections. It also made for a quick cleanup, and Megan and Maren were all too eager to help. By six, they were ready to gather around the tree. Ben put on a Santa cap and began rummaging under the tree. "Let's see," he said, examining a tag. "This one is for Maren. Can you read who it's from?" Maren squinted, and Deirdre could see she was trying to sound out the name. "Megan. Megan!" She ripped the wrapping from the gift her sister had so carefully wrapped. The scene was repeated over and over, everyone taking a turn while the others oohed and aahed over the gifts. Finally, there was only one round of gifts left to open. Ben opened the one from Deirdre, and his eyes lit up when he pulled out the new sleeping bag. "Why, thank you. I didn't know you were even listening when I told you about my old one having a hole burned in it." Unexpectedly, he leaned over and kissed Deirdre's cheek. That really caused the girls to giggle. He handed her the gift he had bought. The package was quite large and rectangular. Deirdre shook it, but nothing rattled. She methodically peeled the paper off and carefully loosened the tape holding the seams. The girls squirmed and shifted their positions. Megan stood by her shoulder in anticipation of what would be revealed. She lifted the top off the box. "Oh, Ben, this is beautiful." She held up an authentic Norwegian-made sweater. Knitted into the fabric were traditional Scandinavian designs. The clasps in front looked to be handmade of silver. She held it up to her front and felt the heft of the fabric. Deirdre buried her face in the wool to hide her tears. Then she looked up. "Thank you from the bottom of my heart," and she gave Ben a hug that lasted many seconds. She felt his arms wrap around her, cuddling her and the sweater together. "One more, there's one more," Maren shouted. "It's from Deirdre." Ben moved the very large box into the center of the room, and the girls attacked it, pieces of paper flying in every direction. When the dollhouse was exposed, their mouths dropped open, and they sat on the floor for a moment, stunned. Maren picked up the transparent package that held the dolls. "Look, Megan, it's a family."
You've been listening to episode 14 of A River Through Two Harbors by Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach. There will be a total of 20 episodes in this reading, so be sure to tune in next time for more from A River Through Two Harbors. If you miss an episode, you can find it on our website, ktwh.org, by clicking on Programs and then Literally from the North Shore on the drop-down list. Each weekend, we'll post the episodes for you to catch up on. To learn more about human trafficking in Minnesota, go to www.yourcallmn.org. Please join us again next time for A River Through Two Harbors, here on Literally from the North Shore.